You know, there's a reason for cautionary tales.
Then why don't more people heed their warnings?
I don't know. But after they hear my new show, they will think twice.
Oh yeah? About what?
Eating Tide Pods, playing with Ouija boards, talking to Karens, you name it. If you should heed caution, we're talking about it.
Check out Harper's brand new podcast, Cautionary Tales with Harper. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you download podcasts.
And be sure to press subscribe and give us a review.
Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Subscribe wherever you download podcasts today.
Not all hauntings occur after dark. Today, we hear the story of a haunting in the broad, bright, desert daylight.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And it is 855-853-4802. The phone number to call in and share your real ghost story with us 24/7. Even if it's happening right now. We've had people do that. They call when it's happening and share as they're hiding underneath the nurse's station as weird shit goes down in the hospital.
True story.
Yes, it has happened. So be sure to call that when you got something weird going on. Or you can always write in if that's your thing at realghoststoriesonline.com. And if you want to go a step further, help us support our show, keep us on the air, become an extra podcast person. You do that by going to ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Either place, same content, two different platforms for you to choose from. $5 a month gets you access to all of our bonus episodes. We got brand new ones for you every single week. You also get access to our huge archive, 7 years worth of shows, advanced episodes of the shows, weeks before the release to the public, and it's all ad-free. So that's a big plus there. When you become an extra podcast person, you not only help keep us on the air, you get all of those extras, our ebook and our audiobook also thrown in there. For your enjoyment as well, your listening and viewing pleasure. You could actually, you could follow along like you do in like seventh grade, or maybe not seventh grade.
Not
that's more
seventh
like a,
grade.
It's like a fourth grade thing.
If that,
were you listening and then you're following along with the teacher? Maybe that's more like first grade.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm way off in my grades.
You started with seventh grade on that.
Seventh grade was... I guess I was slow. No, I don't know what. Yeah. So yeah, more of a first grade thing. But you could do that. And conveniently, what I actually do, because I'm the narrator of our audiobook.
Do you say turn the page?
No, I beep.
Oh, okay.
like a film reel. So every time we get to the place where you're supposed to turn the page, I go beep, and then that's where you turn the page. And so it gets a little annoying after a while, where I just randomly beep in the middle of a sentence, but. You know, you learn how to turn the page.
Yeah.
There's a small percentage of the audience that remembers film reels. Although by the time we were using film reels in school, they were still old. Like, we shouldn't have been using them at that point.
Right.
They were like crusty. They were falling apart. Like, if you flipped it too fast, sometimes the film would literally break because it was so old.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that's what you did. You followed along and then everyone would like, who wants to be the one that turns the reel? And then everybody raises their hand and then somebody gets that job and they somehow always fuck it up. And midway through, you're like, this is the wrong slide. And
yeah,
at least that's how my childhood went.
Okay.
Clifford the dog, I think I remember, was the first film reel.
Really?
I remember seeing in Big Red Dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That would have been preschool.
Okay.
And seventh grade. <It's> wrong intro. Let's go into our first story of the day. It says, hey, Tony, Jenny, Carol, and Harper. First, I want to say thanks. I've been listening to your show for a couple of weeks now, but I was immediately hooked. I've been fascinated with ghosts and the paranormal since I was little. I always wanted to watch ghost-related TV shows and movies. I've had a couple of experiences, but I figure I'd start with this one since it's a little light. I was about 13 to 14 years old at the time, and I was in the it was the middle of summer. My best friend lived two streets down from me, so we were always running around our neighborhood together. One day we were running up and down one street in the bright desert daylight, and while running one way, we noticed a silhouette-looking figure leaning against one of the houses near the front door. It was very dark, solid, and sharp around the edges. It looked very out of place. We were sure it was not there the last time we ran by. It was leaning back into a stucco wall. Its arms looked crossed, and it was wearing a hat kind of shaped like a fedora. My friend took a picture of it, and I'd attach it, but we had no idea what happened to it after she took the picture. And as we walked away, the silhouette did not seem to change shape or angle. As something would if you were to walk along or around, if it makes that sense, or if that makes sense. We were spooked, but continued what we were doing, running up and down the street. Next time we came down close to the area where the silhouette was, it was gone. We were fascinated by it from that point on, and it even became sort of an inside joke. Here it is, where it gets weird. Years later, in my high school English class, we were telling paranormal stories. One of my classmates, who was my BFF and I's friend at the time, had shared a story of the same kind of silhouette creature thing. He mentioned the way it was leaning against a car, arms crossed, and that it had the same kind of hat. Mind you, we've never mentioned our experience to this friend. I immediately texted my BFF telling her what I had just heard, and she did not even believe me at first. I did not think we ever talked to my classmate about this experience, but I could be wrong. I just know we were absolutely perplexed. I do not think I've heard about a creature like this on your podcast so far, so I'd love to know what you guys think. Anyway, I have more stories related to my best friend whose house has been haunted since our childhood, and my grandma's house as well. I'm glad I found your show and have been super eager to write in. I know you've heard this 1,000 times, but I thank you for what you do. There are not many people in this world willing to listen and hear someone out when their stories deal with things we cannot explain. Stay safe, friends.
It sounds like a shadow person, but what's interesting is it's a very stationary shadow person.
Does stucco have that effect? There's certain materials that will give that, like blacktop. On a hot desert day, you'll see the mirage type thing mm-hmm. going on it. And that's what I'm wondering about the material itself, stucco. I don't think it does.
No, I don't think so. I mean, anything, I guess, in a desert setting that gets hot yeah. will have heat waves, but
yeah.
not black ones that are stationary that look like a man in a fedora.
That's just the natural way that the heat waves come off of stucco. It appears to be a man in a fedora. Yeah. New from Home Depot.
No.
Fedora man stucco.
It reminds me a lot of the shadow person story we heard from in Wichita from Doc's Steakhouse of the mm-hmm. the one that could not be explained there along the restaurant.
That's what came to mind too. I have a picture of that. Yeah. Or it's in the video. It's in, if you go to our YouTube page and look up Back for Seconds, it's a little like 10-minute documentary thing I made on that restaurant 10 years ago. And it's the weirdest picture because mm-hmm. it is a shadow person in an, like coming out of like behind like a street sign almost, yeah. isn't it? And it's on the side of a building. The only way it could be explained is if there was like literally a dark cardboard or wood cutout of a man wearing a hat attached to a narrow pole in the ground.
And this photo was shot like it looks like from the way the sun is like at noon.
Yeah.
Because all the other shadows are like straight down.
And it's a pre-Photoshop era photo. This mm-hmm. is like 1980 maybe taken.
Yeah.
And it just... It's a weird photo, and it hung in that restaurant forever. And mm-hmm. I know the restaurant's closed down now. I don't know where that photo, maybe the owner has it, but it's a great photo piece of evidence of a shadow person.
Yeah.
It's always interesting when you look at old restaurant pictures. That was one of them where you look at the restaurant and it's like, that looks nothing like the restaurant does today. But yet the restaurant outside looks super old. Mm-hmm. And that was one of those restaurants where it's like, how many renovations have they done? and it turns out quite a few, you know. But it's always funny when you see like the history of the restaurant pictures. It's like, this doesn't look a thing like it. And sometimes, well, it moved. And others, it's just like, well, they kept building on and building on and building on. And, trends change and the styles change and all that. But that was a neat place. Full of paneling glory. All the paneling you can eat is what that place is like. It was like if Burt Reynolds' basement became a restaurant.
Okay.
It really... Did you ever go in there with me?
No, never went in there.
I thought you went in at least once.
No, you never took me there.
Are you sure?
I am positive I've never been in Doc's.
Are you 100% sure we've never gone to Doc's?
I am positive.
Are you 110? I'm kidding. I'm not going to keep going, but...
Yes, I'm sure.
I thought we'd gone at least once.
Nope.
It was always like a work lunch place.
I think you took Livy once.
Yeah, I must have taken Livy.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's been there. Oh, it was just a fun old, you know, it was like walking back in time. 855-853-4802. Is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. Let's go to our next letter. It says, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. I just found out about your podcast recently, and I absolutely love it. I have a few paranormal experiences in my life and would like to share one of them. A few years ago, I was renting a room at a two-story apartment while I took a course at a local college. At the time, I did not know too much about this apartment, but it was incredibly old, and the interior style showed that. According to the lady I was staying with, the apartment was previously owned by a woman who died there. I did not think too much of it until weird things started happening that to this day, I still cannot explain. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Every morning around 3 a.m., I'd wake up due to the smell of some bizarre, nasty odor, something that I imagine would resemble the smell of a dead body. Also, every night, the owner's cat would try to get into my room and gravitate towards the same corner in the room. It would start to meow and act strangely as if it was playing with someone that I could not see. Occasionally, I'd hear footsteps coming from outside my room that sounded like someone was running up and down the stairs or someone knocking on the front door. However, whenever I went to check, no one would be there. Sometimes I'd be watching TV and the TV channels would switch by itself. There was one time when I was sitting on a chair, unable to sleep. I kept checking the time by looking at my hand watch. At some point, I decided to place it gently down on the wooden table next to me. Then all of a sudden, my hand watch flipped unexpectedly upside down without me touching it. It felt like the ghost wanted to either have its presence acknowledged or it was trying to tell me to stop checking the time. It was an eerie experience, which I will never forget. The first time I saw a paranormal entity was when I was sitting down in my room trying to write an essay for my college course. It was getting darker, so I decided to turn the light on. As I walked to the light switch across the room, I saw a black shadow. It looked like a silhouette of a man wearing a cowboy hat standing next to the window at the corner of the room. Then as soon as I turned on the light, the black figure disappeared. There was also another encounter that happened late at night. Something that sounded like metal clicking woke me up. As I looked around to check where the noise was coming from, I saw a black mist coming out of the wall of my room. It looked like a black shadow of a woman with her hair up in a bun. She had no real shape to her, no legs or arms. However, I could see her staring at me with big round eyes as she crossed the room and disappeared into an armoire. I do not know how I did it, but despite being really creeped out by all these strange events, I decided to brave it out until I finished my college course. I will also mention that on the very last day of my stay at the apartment, nothing unusual happened at all. It was as if whatever paranormal entities resided were glad that I was moving out of their space. Anyway, there were some other minor incidents at this apartment that felt paranormal, but that is all I will mention for now. I hope you enjoyed my antidote, and I look forward to hearing your comments.
I think it's amazing how many different hats shadow people wear.
They're really into hats.
Top hat, fedora, cowboy hat. It's just very interesting.
Well, is it really, or is it because, you know, to me, in some ways, I look at this and go, if they're from another time, hats were quite a thing.
Yeah.
And so if you're just really... quite literally being a reflection of who you once were, it doesn't really surprise me all that much to hear a story where, you know, there's a lot of these things wearing hats. Mm-hmm. And it seems the hat type people don't really interact, I would say, vocally all that much.
Well, but they're shadow people. Most shadow people are not vocal.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, though. Is a shadow person, it's like when you become a ghost, you have so much strength. Is a shadow person in a, and I'm not saying in terms of age of life age, but is a shadow person a ghost who's already been a ghost for quite some time and no longer has the young, spurring energy of a young, fresh ghost that can communicate and let everyone know that they're dead? Are they beginning to fade into whatever the next thing beyond that is? And that's why they've been around longer. They're reflections of a time where hats were more of a thing, and they're near the end of being able to be seen as a shadow person.
I don't know.
It's an interesting way of thinking about it.
So, like, they're fading.
They're older. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying they're, like, it doesn't have to be that it's you know, an elderly ghost or the ghost of an elderly person, but the person could have died at the age of 25, but maybe they've been a ghost for 100 years now. Mm-hmm. And now they're starting to fade. And that's where we're picking up on those details more than, like, they're right in front of us dropping keys or being full-bodied apparitions or this or that. They're the ones that have been around longer.
But ghosts don't expire at any certain point. I mean,
I don't know.
They're like people. They have different times at which I guess they stop showing, because there's some people that see ghosts from, you know, the 16th century. And then there's people that see ghosts up to now, but then the ghost goes away.
But you tend to see a hell of a lot more from recent years than you do 16th century ghosts.
Well, I think it depends on what part of the world you're in.
I do. I agree. But I still think even there, I think you have a bigger piece of the pie where it's more recent, you know, last 100, 200 year ghosts. And the further you go back, the less likely it is that you're going to see it. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think that there's, I don't want to say an expiration, but I want to say a point where maybe they move on to something else.
I don't know. I think our friends and the other continents, all of the other continents would probably disagree, because America is, like, as far as countries go, a baby.
Friends on the other continents, let us know.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, we have the, you know, one of the shorter timelines as far as having inhabitants here.
Sure.
I mean, excluding Native Americans. I'll exclude Native Americans. But as far as, you know.
Yeah. The Europeans had settled.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So the number of people, you know, increasing, that also increases the number of ghosts. So that's why I think that we maybe don't see the very old ghosts, because we don't have a whole lot of very old ghosts here.
I think there's something to that, too. There was a comment I wanted to make the other day on a show, and it slipped my mind. And it was someone had mentioned, it was someone who was in the States. They were from I forgot where they were from, but somewhere in, I want to say the UK, but I could be wrong. But someplace with a much longer history in terms of settlement. And they mentioned that, and the house that we were in wasn't that old. It was only about 100 years old. So it was pretty young. I just laughed in my mind as I'm hearing, because I'm just like, in America, that's a pretty fucking old house. Like, in America, that's like, if it's 100 years old, you'll be lucky if you can keep it up, you know, if it hasn't been kept up.
Right.
A lot of that is like, got time to tear it down. I don't love that idea, but, you know, that's America, where so many things have just get torn down. But I just thought it was a funny observation for someone's perspective when, you know, to make. And honest, because there are certainly far older homes over there, but here it's like 100 years old. That's an old house.
That is an old house.
In most parts of the country. Anyway, 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Hi.
Hi, Tony. My name is Jennifer, and I am calling from a small suburb outside of Cleveland, Ohio. I have lived in Cleveland my whole life, and that is where the setting of my childhood encounters with the paranormal begins. I grew up in a very normal, small, I don't even think you could call it a bungalow house, because it was all one floor in a basement, probably 1,000 square feet, little brick house near a lake. And I was apparently born during my family living in that house. I have my two parents, and my brother at the time was living in this house until I was about 8 years old. So I resided in that house from infancy until 8 years old. My brother is 2 years older than me. My parents were your typical very young married couple. My mom was 21 when she had me. My dad was 25. So they were, you know, using this house as their startup house. And what I can tell you is what I remember, which was interestingly told to me when I was a teenager and we had moved out of the house by my mother. My parents are very conservative people. They have, you know, they're hard workers. They have real jobs. I don't know what that means, real jobs, but are hardworking people in corporate America. Let's just put it that way. At the time, my mom was a stay-at-home mom until me and my brother went to grade school, and my dad worked second shift a lot at a local factory. So my mom was home with us in the middle of the day until the about 10 or 11 at night, usually, from what I was told. So a lot of paranormal things would happen at night, according to my mom, while she was awake and we were asleep. Of course, I remember things from being a toddler until we moved out of the house, so I can share that part of the story with you as well. So I'll start with my part of the story. First of all, I can tell you I loved our house. I loved living there, and I was very distraught when we left when I was 8 years old. And I know that there was a lot of activity around me and my brother, probably because we were so young. And some of the things I remember started very young. I remember standing next to a window in my bedroom, waving at our neighbor. I loved our neighbor very much. He was an older man. He had gray hair. He was super nice. And I remember I would wave to him vigorously. And I was so little in this memory that I have that I remember my fingers were on the windowsill. And I was, you know, still very small because I could probably, you know, just kind of see over the windowsill at him. And I was waving at him. And the reason why I remember this is because the window slammed down on my fingers so hard that one of my nails opened and closed like a door. And the reason why I remember that is probably because it was painful, but also because my mom applied iodine to your wounds back then, and it colored your fingernails like a pinkish purple. And I remember that was really cool, and it distracted me from the pain. But that was sort of the beginning of my memories of what would continue to transpire in the house. So then I do recall being in my bedroom, and I was probably more or less in grade school at this time for sure, because I remember I had a desk in my room. So that probably meant I was at least in kindergarten or first grade. And the light fixture from the ceiling, which you know, normally screw on the glass plate, and then there's a light bulb underneath that. And the only way that thing's fallen out is if the, you know, the screw is loose. Well, I mean, we didn't touch the screws. My parents obviously took care of all that. And being the little perfectionists that they were, I'm sure that glass plate was on pretty tight. Well, I remember that plate just one night falling down and shattering on the hardwood floor at the most random time. I was in the room. The light was on. I was standing in my slippers, luckily. And I remember my mom rushing me out of the room so I wouldn't cut my feet. So that's just one of several instances with light fixtures and light bulbs. At the time, my parents smoked cigarettes. So my mom would wash out these really heavy 80s style glass ashtrays in our utility tubs in the basement. And I do remember this because the utility tubs were centered in between the washer and the dryer, and she would place the washed ashtrays on top of the dryer, which was left of the sink. I remember this specifically because the dryer was up on one of those sort of cement platforms that they used to build in basements because you would have possible flooding and people probably didn't want their washers and dryers to get broken if there was water in the basement. So I remember it was up really high, and I remember that because, you know, you're a kid, you're curious, you can't reach up that high. And I remember I didn't like being in the basement by myself. As much as I loved the house, I mostly kept to the first floor, and then my parents eventually built an upstairs dormer. So the basement was always like, I didn't like being down there by myself. So I would follow my mom down there, but I always would rush up with her. Well, we would walk out of the room after the glass ashtrays were kind of set out to dry on the dryer, and within a few seconds they would go crashing to the floor. I remember these glass ashtrays breaking all the time, but at the time, I can tell you this, my parents, well, my mother specifically, never let on to there being anything wrong. She would just sort of shoo me out of the way and clean up the glass, but she never said anything to me about it being peculiar, so I just, you know, kind of went with it. So that was another instance of glass breaking. Lots of glass breaking in this house. Another instance of a light bulb was when my parents built the upstairs dormer, which it was just like sort of their master bedroom that they built above the house. There was a hope chest that my mother had up against a wall that had two little light sconces coming out of the wall. And she was sitting on the hope chest and she was tickling me, which that was what we did. My mom is and was at the time the best mom in the world. And I know I'm biased, but we always had a good laugh. But it seemed like any time we really laughed, something in that house would get a little upset. And I'm assuming this is some kind of a poltergeist, which I'll tell you about later. But the light sconces would pop and burst in that instance. And I remember a piece of glass cut her on the chest. And I remember being so little and being really worried that she was hurt. And she just said, come on, let's go downstairs and play. But I now know she was really just rushing me out of the room because that wasn't supposed to happen. But at the time, I was so little, I didn't think it was odd. I just remember being upset. I didn't want my mom to be hurt. So the glass breaking was definitely a big part of this house. Then, the older I got, I guess I probably became a little more engaged with whatever entity this was. My mother told me later on in my life, I was about 15 years old, I'm 40 now, but when I was 15, we kind of just got to talking about the past and that house and how much we loved that house and the yard, but we kind of got to talking about some of the weird things that happened in the house. So this is where my mom's part of the story will come in. So my mom told me about how I would sit on the swing in the backyard, swinging away, and this is sort of your classical child ghost story. And again, I'm going to emphasize, my mother, she has a financial career. She's a very linear thinker. She's very smart. She's very quick-witted. She does have a nice spiritual edge to her, but her linear and literal side, I would say, would be probably really examining closely what's going on in this house. So she would never be one to jump to conclusions about ghosts. So I would really just emphasize that I trust her and her experience as she's relaying it to me about this house. So she's telling me that she would see me, and this was getting to be closer to the time her and my dad decided that it was time to move. I was swinging on the swing set and the dog was barking. We had a beagle at the time. She was barking at the swing next to me, which was sort of swaying by itself. And my mom said I was just a bit too chatty with whatever it was that was next to me. I was very engaged and very chatty with it. Now this, I can't say I remember the swing incident, but I do remember a very odd incident where I was playing hide and seek with something or someone, but I was hiding these really cute plastic rings that my mom used to buy me from the drugstore. And they were different colored plastics with different shapes. And I would hide them around the yard and then I would find them. But when my mom was sort of relaying some of this information to me about how I acted in the house, I really recalled, I don't remember who the hell I was playing with. All I know is I was hiding these rings. Half the time I couldn't find the ones that I hid. And I'd get very upset because I wanted the whole collection or whatever it was at the time. And I couldn't recover them. But I don't remember seeing anybody I was playing with. I mean, I could have easily just misplaced the rings. I was a kid, who knows? But I find it very curious that I was hiding rings by myself. I can tell you this, I never had an invisible friend growing up. That was not something that was a part of my childhood. So that wasn't it. Okay, so other things that happened to my mom, her side of the story, was when we moved into the house, I was not in the picture yet. It was just my brother, her, and my dad. I was not along yet. And my mom said the bedroom that my brother and I lived in before they built the dormer had a cross on the wall, like an imprint of where someone had hung a cross. And my mom is Catholic, so that wouldn't bother her. My mom would probably see that as like a good sign. She said that she had the hardest time covering that cross up with paint. So she ended up hanging a picture over it.
And that's where the phone call ends, because she gets to the 12-minute mark. But lots to unpack there.
I think it's interesting that all of the glass-related incidences happen to her. And there's an emotional element to it, you know, either like laughter as in, you know, you're sending out a lot of energy when you laugh. And then in the basement with the ashtray breaking, I mean, the fear that she felt going down in the basement, it's almost like the glass was tied to her emotions somehow, almost like a slider effect, but with glass.
Yeah.
And I may be way off base on that, but that's what I got just from that tidbit.
There was a lot in there. I'm trying to think of, because I started thinking about the cross when she changed subjects, as I'm trying to remember the other elements of the story because I have horrible memories. But there was just so many things in that story of the childhood friend where she was hiding the rings and such. What are your thoughts on that?
But she said she never had a childhood friend.
She didn't, but she was wondering when she looks back and she goes, who the hell was I playing with? I wonder if there was something there.
It could be.
That if upon a little more reflection to it, she may have a moment like you had, where it's like, yeah, I was hiding those rings. Yeah, I was playing with somebody. But what the hell?
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's an accepted fact and part of your mind, but your other part of your mind that is over here in today and can look back retrospectively at reality knows, but wait, there was no other kid there. Well, then who was that kid? You know,
but did she see anyone?
I don't know. I mean, she's saying she doesn't believe so, but I wonder, I wonder if it's just one of those things where it was just such a normal thing of the time that it never registered as being anything paranormal or odd or strange. But if you dig a little deeper, you go, wait a sec. Just like the, like I said, like the moment you had on the show years ago where we were talking about imaginary friends. And I know you know this, I'm just sharing it for the audience, where you discovered, wait a minute, not everybody sees their imaginary friend.
Yeah.
You know, and if it's something that's never really been discussed and this is just kind of how you thought it was, it is kind of like a wait a minute moment. And that, so I wonder if upon any more reflection, there's more to that there. I'd be interested to hear. And I do want to hear more about her mom having a hell of a time trying to cover up that cross shadow on the wall. And if you got more, please do call back in and share your story with us.
Definitely.
Or when you call into the show, the phone system that we have for taking your calls has about a 12-minute limit to it. So just, you know, try and keep things concise as best you can. And if you really need to, you know, you can call back. And I do from time to time, if there is a call back, I do splice things together. And sometimes we get a longer call. But we try to keep things so everybody can have a turn and share their story.
But sometimes people just have more than 12 minutes worth to unpack.
And I get that. And sometimes there is. And that's where you go, okay, that's the end of part one. I'll call back with part two.
Right.
And then we can kind of space it out into different episodes and such. You're always welcome to do that. And of course, and if it is just too much to speak out loud, write it down and send it in. We always love those. I love super long letters that are good.
And those usually turn into EPP stories.
Yeah, they're usually some of the best that we get. Although I do have to say there has been maybe once or twice in the course of some years doing this where I've gone through, I'm sure you have too, when you were curating the shows, where you literally sit there and you're scanning the letter and you would scan them much deeper than I do.
Yeah.
I like scan for like ghostliness and then I'm done. And then I run it through Grammarly and make sure it's readable. When I scan, I've had it where I'm like, I'm going. Like this is a big letter. I'm like, paragraph one, nothing. Paragraph two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. I'm like, we're like three pages in. We're like 2,000 words in, which is like half an episode. And there's still nothing that's happened. And then sometimes it like gets to the very end and it's like, and then I think I saw or I heard keys in the background. And it was so strange. It's like that we had like a 5,000 word buildup to you heard keys rattling. But
that does happen.
It does happen sometimes. But if you got a good one that just suddenly just require, you know, that much space, send them in. We absolutely love to hear your ghost stories. You at realghoststoriesonline.com, or you can always call in 855-853-4802 is our phone number, and call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and share your real ghost stories with us. That is going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, help keep us on the air, become an EPP extra podcast person, as we call them. You sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Get all the bonus episodes, advanced episodes, commercial-free ebook, audiobook, and more. Again, ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Jenny and all of us at Real Ghost Stories Online, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening.